Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. So now we Americans march away from our deadened memories of Memorial Day and its itchy, bloody histories into the sultry, silly season of fun and foibles with hopes for a reopening of the plague shutdown, this millennial coming of age 21. All the while, a deadly game of thrones is being played by rival political sects that threatens to overturn our always faltering democracy into a realm of chaos and bloody insurrection and the possible uncivilities of outright civil war. Some of the nation's most powerful members seem ambitiously reckless and determined to tear up constitutional governance for oligarchic minority rule, rigidly in the grip of racist and religious radicals and their fervid desire for a despotocracy. Their iconic muse is one of the more despicable figures in the nation's bellicostic history, who demands absolute fealty and power, which he has demonstrated he is unworthy of either, and currently faces jail for crimes prior to his decrepit presidency, for which he was twice unsuccessfully impeached because of the cowardice of his lackeys. I start today's program with something I wrote. USA Today is my title for it. The United States evolved to world supremacy in less than two centuries since its revolution, which had been the ambition all along, despite the fearful and protective tendencies toward isolation as a counterbalance to foreign and domestic imperialism. The USA has been among history's most successful militant societies, and until just recently dominated global politics with its immense and highly sophisticated potential for total war this past three quarters of a century since the end of World War II, particularly since emerging the victor of a chilling Cold War and nuclear arms race against Soviet Russia that lasted a half century, which was characterized by inconclusive brushfire wars and threats of world annihilation that gave most of humanity incessant in China. 1 year short of its platinum anniversary, Bolshevik communism disintegrated into ruin and malevolent chaos. Once hoped to be the essential revolution of the masses against the long history of repression, Bolshevism quickly developed into a monstrously cruel and eventually stagnant system that simply fell apart from the mendacious inertia of its own history, which left the USA as the world's only superpower at the beginning of the 21st century and third millennium. The flagrantly preposterous deceit that democracy and capitalism are intertwined rapidly came apart following the communist collapse. Capitalism and democracy are not synonymous. During the half-century Cold War, they were equaled with each other. But since the dissolution of Soviet communism, the old antipathy between predatory capitalists and the general public has accelerated in the USA, combined with savage racism at all levels of white society. The political climate in the USA is one of incendiary reversion, of savage descent to willful public ignorance and intolerance, which are generally existent but not always given the respect or approval that plagues the American Republic during this most politically convulsive period in its short history, aside from the Civil War. Serious, almost morbid attention is paid to pathological pieties and revisionist simplicities of religious zealots, racial supremacists, and far-right ideologues who act at the extreme edges of our anxieties, prejudices, and insensitivities, and reduce the national dialogue to a medieval level while distorting the democratic process to essentially eliminate it. The USA is at a crossroads as severe and fretfully consequential as the Civil War, a crisis of liberty, power, and wealth that will determine America's future as a functional or failed democracy. The USA is a Yankee Doodle come lately, yet we the people stridently boast we are the primo democracy that everyone should emulate, the exceptionalist nation. Yet civil liberties and voting rights are on the chopping block, while average citizens are rendered pathetically impotent through fakery as well as incipient treachery as the USA is caught amidst a political civil war between the two major parties that fought against each other a century and a half ago in a very real and murderous civil war. Republicans were the Union and Democrats essentially the slavery Southern Confederacy. Currently, the parties are on reverse ideological drive this time around. The GOP is the racist-motivated party of white supremacy. The jackass caricature Democrats are Lincoln's unionists. It will take a long time to repair the damage to democracy inflicted by seizure of quasi-dictatorial power by rabidly right Republicans. Yet nearly everyone ought to be aware of the cruel future without constitutional democracy, imperfect though it is, to corruption, zealotry, and latent tyranny. It is patently evident that the USA has been severely traumatized the past 4 years by the appalling presidency of Donald Trump, which was brutally inserted into the national neural core and precipitated a cosmical meltdown. The Constitution has had many enemies, but none have been as threatening to the basis of democracy as Trump's specious dissemblance of truth, honesty, and integrity. The dreadful omnivorousness of Trump's presidency and his fraudulent and violence-instigated claim that he was elected to a second term, his fomenting of a desperate insurrection to overrule his defeat with a deadly assault on the nation's capital, have decisively debased the rule of law, abetted by the Republican Party that selfishly and slavishly exalts him as its Führer. Fortunately, the right-wing attempt at a coup d'etat of the American presidency has so far tottered from its own blatant chaos and dishonesty, and its nihilistic strategy to refabricate the U.S. government into an ultra-conservative mafiocracy with Trump as de facto dictator has not been as yet successful. Yet the nation has been racked in a whirlwind of regenerated bigotry from which there seems no disembarkation anytime soon. Politics is war without the killing, other than the occasional assassination. Yet politics are as vicious and unprincipled, always in crisis and about crises, real and imagined, which makes them real by the response, yet in a sense alleviates the worst aspects of crises, which is war. The USA might, after all, be a dying democracy, unable to curtail the most formidable attempts to purge constitutional governance. A bloated red dwarf of a dying star that rose too quickly and has consumed itself with careless and misguided hubris, consumed by a black hole in which all matter eventually descends. Whatever greatness it has possessed, its quest for liberty and justice for common folk seems to be swiftly and errantly disintegrating, despite an ardent effort to reverse course and preserve democratic values. "Who we are is who we were," John Quincy Adams said 2 centuries ago. He did not mean the flaccid nostalgia for white bread America with a K, which is the mythical centerpiece of Trumpian fascism. Adams was insisting that the Declaration of Independence and consequent Bill of Rights that legitimize constitutional governance are the citadels of democracy, past, present, and future. And that was something I wrote. And now, by Andrew Gawthorpe, who wrote this for The Guardian. Republicans are trying to rewrite the history of the Capitol attack. Don't let them. Do you remember how, just a few short months ago, supporters of Donald Trump staged a violent insurrection? How they stormed the Capitol in an attempt to overturn the results of last November's presidential election, looting and vandalizing the seat of American democracy? The fact that they carried firearms, explosives, and handcuffs, some wanting to kill Vice President Mike Pence, and others to run the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, over with a car, and how the whole thing was incited by the former president, Donald Trump, who told the mob beforehand to fight like hell. If you are willing to admit that you remember these things, you are in a smaller minority than you might think. In recent months, Republicans have not been content to just block the creation of a congressional committee to uncover new facts about the insurrection. They have also moved to rewrite the history of the facts we already know. Republican legislators and right-wing media have suggested either that nothing of particular note happened that day, or that if it did, it was the fault of left-wing agitators like Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Completely unmoored from reality as they may be, Republican voters seem about split between the two explanations, with 48% saying that the people at the Capitol were mostly peaceful, law-abiding Americans, quote-unquote, and 54% saying they were a left-wing mob. Often lies like this are designed to obscure what the party itself does. As Republicans have moved more and more overtly toward rejecting the democratic process, they have to try all the more furiously to cover up their tracks. If the party were forced to admit that the man who they twice put forward to be president, and may yet put forward again, had instigated a violent insurrection, it would be hard for them to continue to function as a democratic political party. Rather than admit what they really are, they prefer to deny what they did. But the attempt by Republicans to rewrite history extends beyond lying about their own behavior. Like pathological liars everywhere, Republicans spin vast, conspirational stories in which they always emerge as either the hero or the victim. Ridiculous claims that the election was stolen or that coronavirus was a minor event which the media overhyped to harm Trump are intended to recast the story of America's recent history in a way which legitimizes the party's ceaseless war against expertise, fact-based media, and political opposition. What makes Republican lies so insidious is that they have many purposes beyond being literally believed. As Russell Muirhead and Nancy L. Rosenblum have argued, they are often conspiracy without the theory, quote unquote. No evidence or explanation in support of them is offered because factual belief is not the point. Instead, they serve to have believers demonstrate their loyalty. To repeat something clearly untrue is a sign of debasement, but also dedication, one that reaffirms one's identity as a loyal member of the movement. The lies also draw a clear line between believers on the inside and those on the outside who react furiously to the blatant falsehoods. This only intensifies the perception among Republicans that they are under relentless siege from hostile forces, making the lies even easier to repeat. The inability to reach a shared understanding of recent history poses a grave danger. While political parties and factions will always disagree over how to interpret the world and its history, the give and take and trust, which are vital to the functioning of democratic politics, depend on a common baseline understanding of reality. Decades ago, the political theorist Hannah Arendt wrote that factual truth is the ground on which we stand and the sky that stretches above us, by which she meant that it sets the parameters and limits of political struggle. If one side refuses to accept those limits, it is signaling that it is capable of doing almost anything to gain the power necessary to remake the world in the shadow of its lies. Another of Arendt's observations was that once a common understanding of the world has been lost, it is incredibly difficult to reconstruct. The sheer scale of the apparatus which works to rewrite history, from TV and radio to social media posts to online propaganda outlets, creates a snug cocoon of validation which is hard to penetrate, especially when it is shared with others. Psychologists have demonstrated that human beings are hardwired to dismiss information that contradicts their worldview and threatens their social relationships. If everyone else in your circle, at home, at the bar, on social media, is accepting the historical rewrite, the easiest thing to do is go along with it. Failing to do so could mean losing friends, falling out with family, and questioning the fundamentals of your own identity. All of these forces create powerful incentives which will remain in place for as long as the party remains committed to its assault on American democracy. It has been said that truth is the first casualty of war, but it is also the first victim of would-be autocrats and revolutionaries. Today's Republican Party has plenty of both. For as long as it and its supporters continue to travel down their current path, they will remain dependent on the constant rewriting of history. There is no other way for them to keep going. As for where exactly they are going, that's a question which ought to worry us all. And that was, Republicans are trying to rewrite the history of the Capitol attack. Don't let them. By Anthony Gawthorpe, who is a historian of the United States at Leiden University and host of the podcast, America Explained. And now, also from the Guardian newspaper, 5 Oregon counties plot to move to Idaho to be with conservative friends, by Carl Murphy Marcos. Just in case you weren't aware, I'd like to read this. 5 rural Oregon counties voted in favor of considering a permanent move to Idaho in efforts to join a more conservative political environment. Voters in Malheur, Sherman, Grant, Baker, and Lake counties passed a measure that would require county officials to promote and discuss moving the Idaho border west and incorporate their population. The counties would join Union and Jefferson counties in Idaho. The predominant industries in the counties that voted to join Idaho are timber, mining, trucking, and farming. The measure might capture local sentiment, but actually moving the border would require much wider support, including the approval of both Oregon and Idaho state legislatures. It would also require approval from Congress. The efforts were led by the grassroots group Move Oregon's Border for a Greater Idaho, which believes adding conservative counties to Idaho would benefit the state. The group cites Oregon's lack of rural representation in the legislature, the state's 2020 drug decriminalization law, and the state's tax rate as reasons to move out of the state. If Oregon really believes in liberal values such as self-determination, the legislature won't hold our counties captive against our will, said Mike McArthur, the leader of the movement, in a statement. If we are allowed to vote for which government officials we want, we should be allowed to vote for which government we want as well. The grassroots organization also strives to grow Idaho West and South into counties in Northern California. And do not confuse Mike McArthur with Michael McCusker, please. Dylan Hauser Schalk is engineer for this program. Concerning the earlier mention of communist Russia, the Soviet nuclear power plant at Chernobyl melted down 35 years ago in late April 1986. Fires broke out in at least two nuclear facilities, and radioactive clouds of smoke rapidly covered most of northern Scandinavia and the ancient Russian city of Kiev. Estimates of death varied wildly, from an initial Russian claim of two deaths to the USA, its Cold War adversary, estimate of thousands throughout Northern Europe. U.S. nuclear people immediately claimed that the nation's superior technology would never allow such a meltdown to occur, and pointed to America's traumatic accident at Three Mile Island in 1979 as a trifling matter in comparison. But they seemed to neglect that no matter how tight a cage, a dangerous beast will eventually escape. Radiation and wind have no respect for political geography. We will, all of us on Earth, eventually realize our lives and our entire species are in grievous danger from nuclear radiation as we are increasing climate change and various human-precipitated pollutions that contaminate the planet with ferocity equal to microbiotic plague. There is no place for any of us to hide, and not even erecting psychological barriers of nationalistic superiority can protect anyone from nuclear fallout. An earthquake in Alaska a week before the Chernobyl meltdown caused a tsunami alert all along the Pacific coasts of British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, and California. No large seismic waves materialized, and evacuations were canceled. Contrarily, hundreds of people apparently flocked from inland cities, at least as reported in Oregon, to observe the tsunami, a distinct human perversity that might very well also be an absurdly psycholeptic metaphor of the myth of lemming suicide. And today, June 3rd, would be the great American poet Allen Ginsberg's 95th birthday, born on this date in 1926. I read a poem from his book, The Fall of America, Falling Asleep in America. We're in the great place, fable place, Beulah, man wedded to earth, planet of green grass. Tiny atomic wheels spin shining. Worlds change heavens inside out. The planets reborn in ashes. Sun lights sparkle on atomic cinder. Plants levitate. Green moss precedes trees, trembling, sentient. Stone eats blue skies. Solar dazzle with invisible mouth and flowers are the rock's excrement. Each million years, atoms spin myriad reversals. Worlds in worlds interchange populations, from worm to man's tiny jump from earth to earth souls are born ever forgetful. Populations eat their own meat. Roses smell sweet in the feces of horses, risen, red-faced. Consciousness changes nightly. Dreams flower, new universes in brainy skulls. Lying in bed, body darkened, ear of the bus roar running, only the eye flickering, Grass Green returns me to Nashville. And that was by Allen Ginsberg, which he wrote in April of 1969. It is his birthday today. And at this advent of the annual silly season, do not be foolish. The USA is still under pandemic assault. Proceed to be silly with caution. Remember that protecting your health and safety protects everyone else.